Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Diane Bischoff James, who is the author of The Real Brass Ring, Change Your Life Course Now. Diane has a very, very interesting story about how spiritual guidance led her to completely reevaluate all aspects of her life and get back on course with what her soul or spiritual guides were telling her was important in her life. And she has written a great book on how she did this and the idea of grabbing brass rings along the way to help you out. Thank you for joining us, Diane.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, you started out in marketing communications and psychology, and you were forming a life that you was not authentic for you. Would you like to go into that a little bit? Because I believe a lot of people go down that path initially in their 20s and maybe 30s.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's a phenomenon that's very, very, very strong, especially in, you know, in North America, in our culture. I felt like I was programmed. I had, you know, really strong father, you know, ex-military, corporate CEO, CFO, and, you know, mom was kind of more passive and, you know, behind the scenes took care of the family. But we had been told that if you do, you know, if you do four things, you're going to be happy in life. If you're a doctor, which I know you are, if you're a lawyer, an accountant, or an engineer, if you're any of those four things, you're going to be happy. And so we were, you know, we had a script. We were supposed to follow this script. You're supposed to get, you know, a big education, get lots of, you know, get a big job or create your own company, and then get a big house, you know, cars and all the electronic gadgets, and then you're going to be the happiest person in the world. So I, you know, the funny thing is one brother of mine is a doctor, actually. One is a lawyer. And I was like, oh, well, I'm going to do my own thing. And I thought I'd be all way out there. And I became a marketing consultant. I went to Northwestern, got a master's in that. And then I started working for engineering companies. So I was kind of like swung back into the fold no matter what. And I did that, and I was successful. I was very, very lucky, had successful business, and I had all the stuff. I had the house across from the lake and, you know, the super cute shoes, and I had a red convertible, and I was doing the stuff that they told me to do. And I was absolutely, you know, I thought that that was the script. And so what happened is a couple people in the same week, of course, which is, of course, synchronicity in and of itself, said, you know, you should go see this woman called Sonia Choquette. And she's now an internationally known psychic, but she was in the city of Chicago, which is where I live. And so I'm like, you know, that's kind of a fun birthday present. So for my 38th birthday, I kind of drove my little convertible down there to go see her. And I really thought, I was doing it a little bit more for fun. I wasn't really seeking a whole lot at that moment, but I thought she'd tell me that I was just the cat's meow. You know, she's like, oh, you're rocking it, girl. Just keep going. You're doing everything right. And I thought she'd give me some kind of trajectory for my future of great success. And I sat with her for an hour in her house in Chicago, and she blasted me apart for 60 minutes. And said, everything about your life is wrong. She said, you know, wrong career, basically partner was very fraternal, so wrong partner. She said, you're not pursuing anything that has to do with your purpose here. She said, you're supposed to find your heart in this lifetime. And she's like, you're this unlit Christmas tree, and not a single bulb is firing. And if you don't hurry up and grab at that real brass ring, she's like, it's going to be too late for you. And I, you know, I'm a business exec, so I just kind of looked at her, and I said, this is probably the only thing I said the whole time. I said, well, what happens if I don't do it? You know, this thing that you're talking about, she said, be an actor, an author, a teacher, a healer, and tell everybody your stories. And she said, well, if you don't do that, you're going to have to come back and do this all over again. And I didn't even know what she meant. But I knew it sounded really bad. I'm like, that sounds like
what?
A warning, you know, from the other side. And so I took it very seriously. And first of all, I cried. I cried like for a straight hour. I couldn't stop crying because how do you redo everything? How do you change everything about your life? It wasn't just, oh, get a new job or move down the street.
Yeah.
So that's where it all started.
Well, that's, you know, one thing that we need to understand is that we have guidance. And so many people really don't understand that they have internal guidance. They are guided by their parents' wishes, like you were. They're guided by their peers. They're guided by, you know, some dream that they have that is not really going to work out for them. You know, we do have specific guidance that we can access. And I think it's wonderful that you did go to the psychic, because that's it's a bold step. A lot of people are afraid to go to psychics, and I think that your story would illustrate why that's true. You know, it's they might not want to know what's coming up, but it is very important to know if you're off course.
It is, and I think the challenge is that we all have a blind spot, at least when it comes to ourselves.
Right.
In general, most of us could look at somebody else who's talking to us, a good friend, or even a stranger. Mm-hmm. I think we're relatively transparent in that you can see where people are hurt. Mm-hmm. You can kind of see their eyes. You can see their body and how they're moving and just get signals. But when it comes to ourselves, I don't know about you, but it's always that I look and seek for external input, because I think I've got the giant blind spot on the right and on the left. And I understand that psychics even can't, they have a hard time reading themselves. They can read everybody else in the world. But because, you know, this whole thing is a journey and a learning experience,
it's not a good idea to read yourself. That's true.
Yeah, exactly. So I totally encourage everyone that, you know, I have the chance to encounter. If you're challenged with getting clear, which is where I started with this whole thing, there's a tremendous resources out there, tremendous helpers, people who are willing to, you know, who can actually get in there and speak to you about what resonates, and then you get to decide if it resonates correctly or not. For her, she also was too polite to tell me at the time. I was like 190 pounds. So
yeah, right.
Part of the, you know, she didn't call me out on that. She could have very easily, but my body was telling me this is not a good path. You're grossly unhappy. I was popping Prozac every day. When Prozac was really popular, you know, you go to the doctor and at the time, and I would say, you know, I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't want to get out of bed. I'm so down and tired. You know, they throw you a prescription.
They
and
do. That's
no one ever,
very true.
You know, they don't look at the holistic aspect now. Where maybe I think we're a little better at this, but now they'll say, you know, maybe some holistic healers would say, okay, we got to look at everything. We got to look at you from top to bottom, from inside out. But back then, they would just write you that white piece of paper, and you'd run off and go pop pills. So
that's true.
So I was pretty much a mess.
So what happened then? I mean, what did you do after your crying spell?
Well, the first thing she told me to do is go get some books. And what I didn't tell her is I had been a student of metaphysics my whole life. I've been studying everything I could ever put my hands on, just because learning about purpose, just discovering about self, anything about self-help, I was always trying to read. So she told me to read 10 more books, although I'd read maybe 2,000 or 3,000 books. And I'm like, okay, I'll read books. So I read some more books, and it led me on a path to find, she said, go check out these guys called Esther and Jerry Hicks. I'm sure you've heard of them. They're the four founding fathers of Law of Attraction. And this was right when they were early on. They didn't even have a book out back then. They had little pamphlets. And weirdly, they were coming to Chicago, and I went to go see them in a ballroom in some Marriott hotel, and they were up on the stage, and this woman, Esther channels this entity called Abraham, and she was just talking about these concepts that for the first time got me so excited I could barely sit down in my chair. I wanted to jump up and go, finally, something makes sense. And she was talking about the fundamentals of Law of Attraction, that, you know, what you everything you think about, you bring about. And she had the three pamphlets back then. Now it's one big book, but it was Law of Attraction, Deliberate Creation, and Law of Allowing. And I thought, okay, now this is the first time someone has said, and I, you know, I'm a business executive. Well, it's the first time someone's speaking to me in a way that I can understand. And she said, if you can control the direction of your thought, that you are light years ahead of these other beings that are on this planet with us. So I set out on a mission. I'm like, okay, there it is. That's what I got to do, control the direction of my thought. So mm-hmm. I started literally putting a band around my wrist. And every time I would say something that was undesirable or had that negative aspect to it, I would like start snapping mm-hmm. it because mm-hmm. I was trained in stinking thinking. You know, the whole post-depression, everything is about these horrors and terrors that are going to happen to you when you walk outside. I mean, that's just what mm-hmm. I was trained in. You know, that
right.
you don't eat all your food, somebody in another country won't have any food to eat. And,
yeah, that's real.
You know, I obeyed. I ate everything. So I had to start with the basics, just kind of work from the inside mm-hmm. out, and then mm-hmm. notice how life is altered by actually fundamental, the one tool that's the biggest tool that's helped me and every client that I'm able to work with is reaching mm-hmm. for a thought that feels better. Because in every situation, there is a lesson, and you know, there's an inherent lesson, but there's mm-hmm. a thought that feels better, no matter how bleak it might look at the time. You know, I've had people come and say, I just got fired, and I can't believe this happened to me. And I'll say, well, did you love your job? And they're like, no, I hated my job. It was terrible. It was miserable. And I could, yeah. like, you don't see, are you not seeing the blessing here? This is a blessing.
Yeah.
You always get yourself fired if it's not a good fit. So, you know, because your resonant value is off. So that's where we started. The whole journey started with kind of just understanding how everything is as within, so without. And mm-hmm. I had to revamp, and it took 2 years for me to actually figure out how to be mind my mind in such a very acute way that I could really learn how to reach for something that feels better and understand that, you know, I was highly reactive, as a lot of us are, you know, I was angry, and then I'd be depressed, and then I was furious, and then I'd be terrified. And so all those those values of being so high and so low, it's obviously not a really happy way to live. So it took me a while. I had to do a major excavation and then marched myself off to Hoffman Institute, which is in California. Sonia said, run, don't walk there. She's like, you needed to go like 10 years ago. And it's a place where you go for 7 days, no cell phone, mm-hmm. no TV, no electronics. Mm-hmm. But what they do is I call it like emotional rehab, because all mm-hmm. the messages that we heard growing up that were inauthentic, all the messages that we took as fact about ourselves were really stayed as this dark, murky film over the top of me personally. But for most of us, we feel that we get stuck and lost in these messages from early on, or trauma as pain, anything that happened to us that got stuck or lodged in the body. And it allows you to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. At least 5 levels of the onion come off, you know, in a week. And I came back a different human being, and I've never in my life has been on a trajectory of positive movement ever since, just because I had a steamer trunk full of nasty darkness that was mm-hmm. not mine. It was, none of it was really me. I mean, none of us, we're all good people doing good things, but it was, I had a dark, kind of a dark emotionally, we had a lot of emotional abuse growing up. So I took all that in and sucked it in, and I could not with my blind spot see through it. So I needed to go for a lot of external help, and I totally encourage everyone to always, there's so many fabulous resources. And just so you know, I have a website, it's called Live Your Everything. Very soon I want to put on this whole resource directory of places you can go, people you can see, techniques you can use for health, wellness, natural healing, anti-aging, any of these products that I'm finding or resources that are helping people. I just want to put them up there purely so that they're available to other people. And so that's part of the future vision of where I want to go with the company and everything.
So would you like to describe to the audience what the brass rings are that you were grasping along the way?
Well, the brass ring is pretty much, it's the opportunities that lie mm-hmm. ahead. If you look back on your life, and we all know that the path is jagged. The path, nothing moves in a straight line. We're all beings of light, so we move as sine waves, and you know, there's ups and downs, and you get to manage this wave. It's one of the 14 rules. I put together 14 rules for happy living. Totally mm-hmm. changed my life after going down this for 10 years. But what happened is I kept noticing that there were these opportunities. And very often they were like wrapped up, usually, I was going to say, like in newspaper. It wasn't something that you would necessarily know that this is going to mm-hmm. be a life-changing event. But for example, I had no idea how to do it, but she told me to be an actor, an author, a teacher, and a healer. And she's like, write this book. I didn't even know what book she was talking about. I thought she wanted me to write a marketing mm-hmm. book. And right. so I came back from Hoffman, and I thought, you know what? I was 190 pounds, but she told me to be an actor, so I'm going to give this thing a shot. And so I had to, the first audition I could find, weirdly, was on my birthday, and it was Oliver. It was for the, you know, the show Oliver. And then I said, you know, I'm just going to try this, and all these negative messages started coming in. They're like, actors are thin, actors are probably pretty, and actors are probably talented. And I had done nothing on stage since high school. So I had to put my fist, like, right through all those messages and say, no, I'm going to give this thing a shot. And so I put on a skirt, kind of like, I kind of had to tie myself up. I put on a big corset and sucked everything in as best I could and went to the audition just to overcome mm-hmm. those fears and all the negativity, and showed up, and I'm like, here we go. And they ask you, when this little table of four people will sit there staring at you, and they'll say, sing me a song. I'm like, oh, my goodness. I had not sung anything in 20 years, not a great singer anyway. And I'm like, just go for it. You know, I said to myself, just do it. And so I just blurted out in the worst, sounded probably like a cat howling at night. You know, I'm singing Wouldn't It Be Loverly. And mm-hmm. these people are staring at me. I thought, oh, man, that was the worst audition on the planet. And I kind of said, okay, thanks, guys, you know, appreciate your time. And I was going to, like, slinking to the door. And the director stood up. She goes, no, would you read for the part of Nancy? And mm-hmm. I stopped. I'm like, okay, that's the lead, but okay. You know, so I came back, mm-hmm. grabbed the script, and just kind of somehow this Cockney accent came on, and I was kind of, you know, just doing, oh, Oliver, would you like some bread with that? And, you know, I was like doing this mm-hmm. whole thing in Cockney. And they seemed to perk up. And they lightened mm-hmm. up, and I lightened up, and we kind of had some fun. I said thank you again, and then they escorted me to the door. They're like, get out of here. And so I left, and I went to my car, and I was so happy that I just showed up that I was literally dancing in the snow outside my car.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because I had the courage to show up. Terrible right. audition. Didn't matter. I was like, first steps mm-hmm. first, you know, just take your baby steps. And then I waited and waited. You know, I waited for a phone call because I thought, mm-hmm. you know what, if you think what you think about, you bring about. So they're going to give me a role, and I'm going to get a lead role or something. So I mm-hmm. waited like 5 days, and I get no calls. So I thought, okay, you know, that didn't work out. Reach for the thought mm-hmm. that feels better. I'm like, okay, you know what? You're going to be more prepared next time, and you're going to know what you're doing. So you'll just get some training, but you'll show up again. Don't get down on yourself. That was just the first one is past you. That was my thought that feels better. And then, of course, what do you think happens? I get the phone
what?
Call.
Uh-huh.
And they said, we'd like to offer you a part. And I'm like, yeah. They said, mm-hmm. We'd like to offer you the part of Townsperson One.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. It was like the best day of my whole life. I mm-hmm. made it into theater. I was the best Townsperson One in the world. You know, I didn't even have a name. But I danced on the stage for 3 months, and I lost 30 pounds. I was so happy being up there. I had so much fun. I met new people, and I just felt the energy of being where I belonged, which was enjoying mm-hmm. myself in performing, and it changed my whole life. So that's an example of the brass ring. The brass ring is these opportunities come in weird packages. Someone will say, you know, why don't you go check out this guy tonight? And, mm-hmm. you know, a couple times I'll be like, oh, I'm so busy, I don't know if I want to. If I hear that message twice, the way it works is if you hear it once, usually it could be just information. If you hear it twice, spirit is talking to you. If you hear it
right.
three times, you're not listening. You're not
That's
listening
right.
at all. So
That's right.
I'm very mindful about the messages that come mm-hmm. in, the communication that comes mm-hmm. in. And I ask myself all the time, is this a brass ring moment? And if it is, mm-hmm. I totally go for it with no expectations of the mm-hmm. outcome, just to be participating. And I cannot tell you how many times that has led to this crazy path to totally fix my body, to lose over 55 pounds. I'm a SAG actor. I do, you know, 4 and 5 films every year. I'm just so lucky to have been able to totally reboot everything. But it's because I say yes to about 95% of the things that come along, unless it doesn't resonate well. If it doesn't resonate with me, then I do gratefully and, you know, very lovingly pass. But for the most time, I feel a little bit like that movie, Isn't It Yes Man, where everything that comes along he has to say yes to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a very lengthy explanation, but that's what the brass ring is about, that our packages of opportunities are flying by, and if we grab at each and every one of them with gusto, it's amazing how life unfolds, because one thing leads to the next, and once you have that experience, it just blossoms, mostly from the inside out.
So tell us a little bit about the different aspects of your life and how they changed, relationships, career, finances, health. Those are the 4 big ones.
Okay. Well, the relationship, I did recognize Sonia, you know, when she dropped that message, that, you know, she shared the message, your lifetime goal is to find your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have one, you know. And I didn't know whether she meant, like, I don't have a heart beating inside, or I just had no feeling. I didn't have feelings towards my current, my relationship. 16 years of marriage, and I really couldn't feel my heart at all. And mm-hmm. it wasn't about, we're good people doing good things, but it just wasn't resonating right. So I had to come mm-hmm. to terms with that. I brought mm-hmm. it up. We communicated about it very directly. We knew that something was wrong. And then made all the changes in a very conscious way, very, very, very mm-hmm. conscious way, about moving towards being, we decided to do the family house. And so we lived together for several years because I had this mini mansion across from the lake, loved the house, but we decided, okay, what if we're single together, don't have to go mm-hmm. through splitting all the finances immediately, just we're allowed to revamp ourselves in a setting where we could still be with the kids and everything. And so we did that for a while, and then moved very, very, very consciously towards a divorce. It just was not the right relationship, and I couldn't fix something that was just never right to start. So we separated, and I had I call it my cougar dating period. I had so much fun. I cannot tell you. It was fabulously fun. Met all kinds of new people, had many experiences, a lot of which are in the book. A lot of the favorite experiences are my difficult ones, where, you know, I met a beautiful man, but he was an alcoholic, and mm-hmm. Had just the soap opera event of all of life's tragedies and all of its glory and tragedies all mixed up into one, and it became this weird life-changing event for me through that single period. And then that ended. I won't do a spoiler alert, but that ends in a particularly, you know, a tough way. And mm-hmm. Lived and grew through it, grew tremendously through it. And now I'm engaged, mm-hmm. and I met someone, and we've been together for several years and have a much more healthy relationship. And the kids are fabulous, I must say, because they saw their mom say no to what wasn't working, but say yes to everything else that led to more authenticity. And because of that, you know, literally kids are, you know, singing all the time and happy and great grades, and everybody's, and they're having healthy relationships, which is really beautiful to see. They're able to model what they see. You know, kids, according to Piaget, you know, we're under those stages of development, and if you don't see happy parents, it's really hard for you to model happy parents as you become adults,
right?
Because concrete operations, you know, we only have concrete operations in our mm-hmm. our abilities until we're 12. And we don't even start to have formal abstract operations until after 12 or 13. So if they see two parents that don't communicate, don't sleep in the same room, aren't loving, mm-hmm. don't have the aspects mm-hmm. of care and concern, they can't model that when they get older. So
right.
I felt like it was my responsibility to show them how to live a happy life, and mm-hmm. to be able to honestly say those words every day. So that has worked out beautifully. And then you said career, and then career has been a huge shift. I still do the marketing. I look at it as a financial track. It has been there for me for many, many years, and I've been very fortunate that's worked out well. But I also do acting. I do film. I've decided to focus. I do film and commercials, but I decided to focus more on film. And I'm in a movie with Paul Sorvino that should be out this year that's called Precious Metal. And it's a great movie. It's a, as with anything, it's kind of like a, there's some, disasters and horrors, and it's kind of like a coming of age in many ways, not only for him, but for this a person in his life that he discovers has a very close connection to him. So that's a fabulous opportunity. So I'm just, really lucky about that. And then I've been able to overcome the body issues. That was tough. That was really tough because of all the extra weight and the stress. And I imagine you must see this all the time with patients. If we're not really experiencing self-care, the body will show us that. So I had shoulder issues. I had to have shoulder surgery. I've had knees and feet and plantar fasciitis and all of those, and neck and bulging discs and all the stuff that you don't want to have. Mm-hmm. And so I had this wonderful experience where I was in Sedona at a hotel, and we kind of went to a random class, and this woman stood up and said, I had trouble with vertigo and all these physical issues, and she said, I decided to commit to something to make my life better. She said, I said, oh, heck no, I'm not going down the road like this any longer. She said, so I committed to 2 years of yoga, and she said, no matter what, that's what I was going to do. And she said, after 6 months, her vertigo stopped, her physical issues were completely gone, and now she's a yogi, and she's running all over the country teaching people. And I thought, if she can do it, I can do it. So I committed. I said, 6 months, maybe not 2 years, but 6 months. Mm-hmm. And I started doing yoga, and I could only touch my knees. I could barely go to my knees, and I was wearing gear because I was in so much pain. I looked like somebody, like a crash dummy. I had all this stuff on me trying to do yoga because everything hurt, but I decided to commit no matter what. Now I can, I'm very well. I can touch the floor. I can pretty much do the splits on a good day. I've got my mobility back, and I have to manage my body with physical activity. And if I don't, it starts to talk to me. So it was about making a commitment for self-care. And it doesn't matter what you do. Tai Chi is great. Anything that brings the energy back, anything that, weight-bearing exercises along with something that has some cardio. And it's just a commitment for life, because otherwise they told me I'd be in a wheelchair by the time I was 60. So I just was like, heck no to that. And it's about caring for self first and then caring for others.
True. So would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Yes. The book is called The Real Brass Ring, Change Your Life Course Now, and it has the 14 rules for happy living. Those have changed my life, changed the life of everyone in my family, and everyone that I work with privately. It is on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. It's in bookstores, mostly in Illinois. And my website is liveyoureverything.com, and it has resources for health, wellness, anti-aging, beauty, and just tremendous resources to help you get clear, get going, and get happy.
So you talked about some of the rules for happy living. Can you share some of those?
Yes. Absolutely. One of my favorites is about managing your wave. And we talked about that a little bit earlier, but we are beings of light, and everything is in a wave pattern, mostly a sine wave pattern. And what has been the most helpful rule about that, in a perfect situation, there is a line that would cut right through the middle of the wave. And let's say that line is feeling peaceful, feeling comfortable, feeling, satisfied. And it's really wonderful to take a look and plot your own course on that way, on that line. And mine used to go super high, which would be angry, furious, terribly upset, or extremely low, which would be not functioning well, didn't want to get out of bed, felt like I was going to cry. And so those extremes of, you know, anger, and that's, you know, inner rage, and then depression, which is, you know, deep sadness for self and for all those traumatic things from the past. And so one of the best and most helpful tools is just look at your wave. Where is it? If you're on a perfect day, you're non-reactive, meaning that anything can happen and you can go, okay, I get the lesson in that. What is it about that is here to teach me? What is the thought that feels better? And you can keep your wave just flowing very nice above and below. And that is a great opportunity that we have. Anytime we are highly reactive, we're off our wave. And so I try to use the wave just as kind of a visual model. And if people are going to be highly reactive, sometimes have your feelings. Call it out and say, I even say sometimes, you know, if I say to my kids, okay, I'm in the victim chair. I'm going to give myself 24 hours. You know, I didn't get this contract. I'm feeling bad about it. I lost the movie, and I actually just recently was up for a big commercial. I didn't get it. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm going to sit in the victim chair, but I'm giving myself a day. And then, like, I don't want anyone to get me out of it either. And so, you know, eat your chips, eat peanuts, you know, eat ice cream, go get some Haagen-Dazs, whatever you want to do, and get out of it. And so I do. I snap out of it very quickly, and then I get back on this regular functioning wave. But if you're going to be in these situations where you want to be emotional and care, and you're like, okay, I need some time to feel this way, let yourself have your feelings. So it's not about not feeling your feelings. It's just about really being conscious about how long you want to be up or above that wave. And another one of the rules is about speak your piece. Mm-hmm. Totally life-changing. It is critical that we remember that yes means yes and no means no. And that when you are allowed to actually speak from the heart center in truth, that strangely and weirdly, people around you actually will help you celebrate that. As much as you think everyone wants you to say and do what they want, actually we're good people that want good things for others. So I learned how to say some pretty simple things, such as, that doesn't work for me. Mm-hmm. And those simple words, it's really funny. Everyone will, their face changes. They're like, oh, well, then you don't have to come to that. Or maybe you don't want to participate in that. I'm like, no, you know, I'm really sorry. That just doesn't work for me. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is no one can argue with that statement because if we're living in
they're
our
not you.
Self.
So, that's right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it takes some time to practice, though, because I think so many of us are taught to be pleasers. Mm-hmm. And we say yes to everything because you're supposed to, or the community said you are, or the school said you are, or your job. Your job said this or that. And I counsel people and travel all over with life reboot workshops. And one thing I hear very often, and people will say, okay, are you fully expressed? And some of the answers they'll say, some people will say yes. And I'll say, oh, really? Okay, with close relationships, and then we talk about at work, and then, you know, with your family, because it seems like those are the three big groups where we can segment. With your friends, most people say, yeah, I'm fully expressed. Very often I find with family, they say no. Well, everyone but this person. Oh, well, not my sister, and not my mom, and not my dad. Well, those are the people we came to work things out with. So with practice and love and patience, that helps open your heart up again, because you don't have to be so closed about your feelings and your full experiences.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit at this point about what you learned with the alcoholic boyfriend, because I think a lot of people see themselves as rescuers, and you know, the whole idea that if you're interfering with someone else's spiritual lessons by the amount of help you're giving them, that you're not doing you or them any good, and things are likely to fall apart and get very serious very quickly, so that, you know, you get out of that situation. You know, the whole idea of codependence, you know, that's a real, and especially for mothers, you know, the mothers of the world can overcare for their children and become codependent like that and not meet their own needs. And I think that's a big part of breast cancer, over-nurturing.
Wow, that's fabulous. I love that. I love that. I love that concept, and that it really is resonating with me right now. I'm getting the chills. You know, the whole bottom line about being in experience with any addiction, and it could be anything. My theory is that we all have, and let's just go to self first. I think we all have some addiction. You know, mine is gum and sugar. You know, we
right.
all have something which will get us started, and you feel like you can't stop.
Right.
And we all have something. You know, it could be shopping, it could be gambling, it could be sex, it could be anything. So I always try to also, and this helped me a lot with the compassion part of it, since we all have something. It's not to say, okay, people who have alcoholism or who have drug addiction are in a different category. We're all working through these addictions in this lifetime. I think we all picked a couple to work on. In the case where it is a world-class addiction, like someone who has an addiction to alcohol, drugs, some of the bigger ones, the important thing and the most helpful thing for me is to notice how, you know, it's the victim triangle and how to notice when you're on that. One of the best books ever is with Diane Zimbrohoff, and it's, you know, The Victim Triangle. And that book, small book, easy to read, really fast, is one of the tools I use to get off of that triangle. The triangle is that there's the hero, the victim, and the villain. And with the person who's in an addiction, you're always running in one of those chairs. You either didn't rescue them, which makes you the villain, or you did rescue them, which made you the hero, but then you didn't do it right the next day, that makes them, you and them, the victim. So I try to point out and to show, especially with clients, when you're in an when you're in any kind of codependent relationship, you are overdoing and trying to overcome something on their behalf, which is never going to give you satisfaction because that triangle goes round and round and round and round and round, and you just can't get off of it.
It does.
So you have the loving aspect in that you're trying to help, but in trying to help, you are in somebody else's circle.
Yeah.
And the truth is, there's one circle around you. It's one of the rules. It's about, you know, basically, it's like a 4-foot circle, and that's the only thing in this lifetime you came to manage.
Right.
So if you're in somebody else's, and this gets right into what you talked about, the helicopter parenting and people who are, oh, you know, running in there trying to wipe the kid's face as they're eating, and I'll get Susie into high school. I'll write your essays for you. I will do this for you. I'll do that for you. You are not in your circle. You're in their circle,
and you're not helping your child either, because I mean, the kids, like especially the boys, that end up not knowing how to cook, not knowing how to do laundry, not knowing how to clean up their room. They go off to college. What happens? I mean, who takes care of them there? You know, you've got to educate your children to take care of themselves.
Oh, I totally agree. And I always tell my kids, and I say, you know, did you realize that one of your greatest roles in this world is contribution? And if you don't know how to contribute and help with the household and the family, I said, then I'm not giving you a gift. And they look at me and they'll say, we think you're wrong. we disagree. I'll say, you know, the fact that you even disagree with the fact that I can offer you this gift, I said, then I should give you more of the gift. And so they argue with me about it. But I completely agree with that philosophy that we have to contribute. And kids these days, I feel really bad for the whole generation that's growing up with my kids, because I was just told recently, Mom, nobody puts away their own laundry. Don't you know that? And I looked at my son like, are their hands broken? Are their legs broken? I said, I'm not getting this.
Yeah. Who's going to go to college and the rest of your life and put your laundry away, you know? I said,
that's a sickness. And I said, we won't participate in that. And he just hops off. And I was like, put your laundry away. And so it's funny where that, and you know what it is, unfortunately, then you get into the whole entitlement, which I think is just rampant. And it builds up on like kind of a narcissistic personalities where, why should I put my laundry away? Because it's on the floor? I'm really not into any of that at all, because I would like to grow healthy, happy people that can take care of themselves. But I could go on and on I see things that I just wish we hadn't moved into this permissive parenting at such a high level, just because, you know, we went from the totally strict kids can't talk unless they're spoken to mm-hmm. oh, you can't, you know, I'll spoon feed you or breast, you know, metaphorically
yeah.
breastfeed you
right.
until you're 22 years old.
Yeah.
So that might lead to this, as you said, that concept that so much of the trouble is that we are breastfeeding excessively mm-hmm. and you know, that's the nurturing ad nauseum. That's just, to me, completely unhealthy.
Yeah, and, you know, by the time a mother gets breast cancer, I tell them, because I treat a lot of breast cancer here, I tell them, it's all about you now. You know, go home and tell your family it's all about you. You know, you're not there to nurture them anymore. You're there to try to save your own life. And it requires a total redo of how they think about what their purpose is. And sometimes if they can find their purpose, they can get out of breast cancer. It's kind of like a final exam.
Wow. And it's all, and another one of the rules it ties into is it's about receiving. And mm-hmm. I put that in specifically for women because
right.
Maybe that first time of experiencing receiving, the mm-hmm. first time someone actually made me a lunch or made me a breakfast, I actually think I might fall over. Like if someone actually made me food in this house, I don't know what I would do because I have mm-hmm. never, and mine isn't bad. You know, a lot of people are on their own around here, but I had to practice what would it feel like? Mm-hmm. What would receiving feel like? And I mm-hmm. pose that to people and these women give me a blank stare. They just stare
right.
at me like, I don't know what that would feel like because mm-hmm. we have been trained, and this is the
just
other
to
part
be givers.
That's tough, I think.
Yeah, just to be givers.
We are, but then especially I think in our generation mm-hmm. where the women were told not only do we have to caretake, but we have to mm-hmm. be breadwinners, and we
right.
have to take care of that house, make sure nothing's wrong with that one, and
mm-hmm.
you know, what is it, you know, bring home the bacon, fry it up in a pan, and never, ever let him forget he's a man. Do you remember that one?
Right, yeah.
That was the ad that used to be on when we were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, we do everything. We make all the money. We take care of everybody and then make sure your guy is happy. And I thought,
right.
that's a lot for one person,
is,
you know?
Yeah.
So messed up. I mean, that's so out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of women, especially in their 40s now, 50s, you know, 60s, and maybe it's changing hopefully a little bit. I have a daughter who's 22, so I think that their generation might be able to break free from that. But I think we had a couple of decades in there where it was, you know, women superheroes that were being
mm-hmm.
formed and somebody else was raising the kids too. And I think that was
yeah.
also created quite a bit of quite a difficult situation for the kids because if one of the caregivers is not the parent because the mom's off traveling every single solitary week,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how that bodes well for the nurturing aspect and for the, you know, the unconditional love that needs to be shared early on. So I think
mm-hmm.
our generations have gone through these shifts and changes, and I hope that now we can find the balance, the actual balance, which would be, you know, being the loving caregiver, caring for ourselves, being able to be
mm-hmm.
well cared for, but not go for the Kardashian model, which is what I thought you were supposed to do,
mm-hmm.
because that's a group of unhappy people over there. I don't know what everybody else thinks. But.
Uh-huh. They're certainly
they're,
different.
They're not. Well, yeah, but are they happy? I mean, I don't know. I watch the shows occasionally if they're on, but I'm just
mm-hmm.
I just can't stop watching because I
yeah.
think they're so unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was like,
yeah.
oh, I don't know.
Well, if you're not happy on the inside, though, there's very few external things that create happiness. You know, it's like
mm-hmm.
it's happiness is a state of being. In my opinion, I've always felt that. I've always felt that I was one of the happiest people that I knew, even back in high school, through college, through everything. And it wasn't dependent on how much money I had. I actually didn't have very much money going to college. I paid, you know, I had to work my way through school and join the military to become a doctor. And it wasn't dependent on my health. It was because I spent many years with a real serious fibromyalgia illness. It wasn't dependent on relationships. And I can just be happy just sitting in this room, you know. I don't need external things to make me happy. And that's
that's utopia, an important what
lesson.
You have just described.
Yeah.
But that is that's the utopia. I think that is the utopian situation. If I could describe what you said, it would be really being in love with yourself
mm-hmm.
as you are.
Yeah.
And that radiates through no matter what's going is it external situations,
yeah.
it radiates right through whether your health is perfect or not, whether
right.
you're getting to buy something or do something.
Mm-hmm.
I love yeah. that. I think if we could be in a perfect world, we all would be you
mm-hmm.
in your earlier years and be a teenager that says, God, I just think this is great, I'm great, the world's great, and this is a fun, loving place to be.
Right.
And so that's
you don't
I'm
need
still
anything
holding on to
externally.
That
model. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you know, it's not and with that, the thing that is so important with that is that I know that I am not my body. I know I'm not my emotions. I'm not even my thoughts. What I am is much greater than this physical form, and it's eternal. I will always be perfectly fine. And I know that. I mean, I know that at my core being. I'll share something with you. I had pneumonia this week. I actually had to take off 2 days, and Dr. Gordon had to do 2 surgeries of people flying in, because people fly in from all over the world to have surgery. So I missed 2 days of work on IV antibiotics. He had to do the surgeries, and I'm still on antibiotics, and I don't feel that great. You know, last weekend I had to cancel the radio show, and I don't think I've had to cancel the radio show in 20 years, you know. So I just came out of a very, very serious illness. But yet I'm pretty happy. I mean, I'm not unhappy. I'm not an unhappy person. I'm not depressed. I'm not anxious. I'm not worried. I'm going to be fine. So, you know.
And that nugget that you just shared about, you know, that we are the souls that are in a human
yeah.
body, having a human
yeah.
experience. But if we can connect to that beam of light,
mm-hmm.
that joy, that experience of authenticity, that
mm-hmm.
is what I think this movement, this whole movement, that I'm so happy that you have a program like this and that others have these fabulous books and so many great experiences out there, because I believe
mm-hmm.
that when we all sit in those kind of chairs, those happy chairs, that's
right.
when all of this going to shift. That's when our shift
yeah.
will be, the vibrations will be
it
happier,
is.
We'll be with people that we enjoy, we'll be speaking
right.
our peace, we will be, and I call it the leveraging your alignment, it's one of the rules,
mm-hmm.
the alignment, you know, the mental, emotional, spiritual, physical, which we're just kind
right.
of touching on, when all of that is resonating in a really nice form, we feel
mm-hmm.
great. But can I
it
share
is.
One thing? This is kind of a newer experience for me ever since I made these shifts based on my experience with Sonia, going to
mm-hmm.
Hoffman, and now just pursuing life's work and
mm-hmm.
pursuing and making contribution, which has been a huge part for me because that's really makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
What I've noticed is that there's this weird love affair that I'm having right now with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I was not you growing up. I was very depressed, and I think we had low, partly genetic from chemistry, low serotonin, but had to really figure out how to keep moving despite the depression.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm
mm-hmm.
about, I was as polar opposite as you, because you probably had better biochemistry, but also probably better circumstances maybe being raised.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe we sat in two different places. But what I've noticed is as it's elevated up, because I think a lot of people do feel bad about themselves. I see them. I talk to
yeah,
them.
They do.
We travel all over the country. And they,
mm-hmm.
they will speak to me for 2 minutes. And a lady would just came in like a week ago. And, you know, she sat down for just a very brief, we call it, you know, we do a quick diagnostic. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, she was saying, I'm a seeker, and I had this bookstore, I had this wonderful metaphysical store, and I opened it,
mm-hmm.
and my husband didn't support me, my mom didn't support me,
mm-hmm.
I started getting sick, the store went under, And she said, mm-hmm. and I'm a failure. I looked at her, I said, the fact that the very first version of what you felt the best about didn't work out the first time doesn't make you a failure. It makes you a hero. I said, don't you see? You just need to get to try version two. Version one, it's a jagged line. It doesn't always go. Yeah, just because you opened one thing. But the truth is, I said, what the problem is that you're trying so hard to make sure your husband likes it and your mom likes it, even though it's not of your original religious background. It's in the spiritual category, and it wasn't a fundamental religion. Maybe the reason that the first one didn't work is because you were still trying to please them. And when you realize that the people who came into your store and enjoyed it and thought it was beautiful and bought something from you that resonated with them on a higher level, you missed all the things that you did that were fabulous. I said, you know, you need to get that label of failure off of you and look at yourself as a hero, and all you have to do is regroup. We all have to regroup a bunch of times. It doesn't, again, it never goes in a straight line. It goes all over the place. And so she brightened up. She stopped labeling herself as a failure. And I said, you know, you need to try on new labels for yourself. And a lot of us have those bad labels that are, we can't really, as you know, they're in the cellular level because of earlier messages that aren't us. And that's where the beauty is that you didn't, hopefully you didn't have many of those. You might have had a much more harmonious upbringing. But if we can move towards that as our future, my gosh, I think this would be a much easier place to connect with people and have all much more consciousness and have more fun and all the good things.
Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour, so we're going to need to go. But I do appreciate the interview. It's been a fun hour. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been great.
Well, great. Well, this is Dr. Susan Kalb with Temple of Health Radio Show. We've been interviewing Diane James on The Real Brass Ring, Change Your Life Course Now. Next week, Matt Adalian will be presenting Healing the Body and Awakening Consciousness with the Adalian Method. And on the 16th, Ellis and Brown will be talking about Invoking the Scribes of Ancient Egypt, the Initiatory Path of Spiritual Journaling. And then on the 23rd, Connie Strausen will be talking about Defeat Cancer. This week, or this month of May, the third Thursday, we will have Paul Von Voorde presenting at the Dunwoody office. Paul is an author of God's Genes and Consciousness and a number of other books that are fascinating. If you're here in Atlanta, please plan to attend that. Well, thank you very much for joining us for Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kalb.